It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. It's our all-star panel hour. This week on the program, I'm going to share some thoughts on 20 years since 9/11. How's the world changed? What do we remember? What things did we expect to happen? What did happen? And is there a way to undo some of the horrible damage and the things that came out of it? We're also going to talk about what's going on in Texas, some rewriting of history by our friends in the party of Lincoln, who seem to love Robert E. Lee, which is kind of weird. But hey, like anything the GOP does, the opinions change, the history changes. Just depends on who's rewriting it on that day. But here to share some thoughts on our topics for the day, our all-star panel of Rich Ojeda, national spokesperson for No Dems Left Behind. Rich, thanks for being here.
Hey, everyone.
Also, Sarah Burris, reporter over at Raw Story. Sarah, thanks so much. And, of course, Scott Dworkin.
Yo,
co-founder
what's up, Rick?
Of the Democratic Coalition. And so he says hello, so good. Glad to see everyone here and not leaving me hanging.
You got it.
Let's start with 9/11. The 20th, I hate to call it an anniversary. It's been 20 years. I want to go around the room and let's start with you, Rich. You know, where were you? What do you remember? What's that? Everybody knows where they were, but what sticks with you?
I was a young captain stationed at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and I was actually down at Fort Polk, Louisiana, and we were training one of our units that was getting ready to go to Kosovo. And I was driving through what we call the box, and I went to a checkpoint, and the person told me that a plane had just crashed into a building in New York. And of course, we thought that was horrible, but we continued on. And literally about 30 minutes later, I went through the same checkpoint, and that's when they told me that a second plane had hit the second tower and that we were under attack. And they also told me that the Pentagon had been struck. So I went and I found a person that had a 4-inch black and white television, and we sit in his Humvee and we watched the towers fall. And I will tell you that I knew immediately that our lives were about to change. And absolutely, you know, for the next 20 years, we have been going nonstop.
And you especially. I mean, you know, I think the rest of us, you know, we probably saw it from different perspectives. You right on the front lines of this, knowing, you know, where you're going somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, it was scary for everybody. You know, I'm a combat soldier, and you know, we train for war, and then all of a sudden you're faced with it, and you know that you're going to be a part of it, and you also realize that, you know, when we finally do put boots on the ground, people's lives are going to be at stake. And sadly, you know, when we go to war, usually what happens is we do lose people on both sides of the aisle. And that has remained true. And that's just how it was.
Yeah. Sarah, let's go to you. What do you remember of the day?
I was about to go to school and I didn't, because I turned on the TV and was terrified and didn't understand what was happening or what was going on. I was a little kid whenever the Murrah building was bombed. And I remember when, I know that there were a couple of people that I went to school with that whose parents, like I think one of my friend's dad was an ATF agent who wasn't in the building, he was in the field. We knew somebody else whose dad was an FBI agent who was in the building, who was killed. And so when that happened, nobody at school ever talked to us about it. You know, nobody had like a meeting to be like, okay, let me explain to you what a terrorist is. And so when I sort of saw that happen to the towers, it kind of made me feel like, oh, crap, now everybody's going to experience what we did in Oklahoma City. And there's a whole world that is going to have to, a whole generation of people that are going to have to learn what a terrorist is and what that means. And and how scary it was. I was so terrified. And I remember I called my mom because she was at work and she wasn't answering the phone. And I was so scared because my mom wasn't answering the phone. And I called my grandpa, he wasn't home, and he didn't answer the phone. And like, nobody was answering the phone. And I was so scared.
Yeah,
even in Oklahoma.
Yeah. I mean, that's traumatic. And it's one of those things where, you know, to follow up on this, I had a friend who lived in the UK who said afterwards that, you know, now you and America are going to get to know what we've been living under, you know, for years because of all the bombings that were going on in the UK for years before. Your loss of privacy, your loss of ability to move freely. And sadly, she was right because we did lose a lot of that. Scott, let's go to you. What do you most remember?
I was in school, and it was, I think, one of the first weeks of school. I had just started college, and everybody was either hungover or tired, and nobody believed when you heard whispers. And I just remember the announcement of like classes shutting down and the visuals of everything. Remember, we didn't have cell phones. For anybody who doesn't remember, we didn't have cell phones that had like visuals and things like that. We had like text and things like that. So we didn't really have news spreading like that. And then when it did happen, I remember my phone not working in North Carolina. And it just, you know, you kind of freaked out a little bit. Then you go back to your dorm and you're isolated in your little island. And we're like partying like it's the end of the world. You know what I mean? So there was that kind of a moment where we realized some kids started leaving school because they were either in the National Guard or they joined the military right after that. I had a lot of friends that were inspired to join the military just because of that event. They left college, they left their home, and they went straight over there. And most of them did not come back. Whether they did come back physically, they did not come back mentally, or they died over there. But you know, I also, right after 9/11, I was able to visit the site in New York City. And then that same day, by happenstance, Mr. Giuliani, while he was mayor, comes into the Italian restaurant that we're in, and he gets like this standing ovation that I've never heard in a restaurant ever before, and how far he's fallen. But yeah, it just was seeing it firsthand. The smoke and stuff like that was still was like a haze over it. That burned in my memory forever. Like, and you just, even when you walked away from it, if you were in a different borough, like you could see it from wherever you were, you could see like a haze. It just felt like the energy was very weird. It was very positive. People were really nice to each other. It was very upbeat, and patriotism was at a peak that I've never seen before. So it was interesting to see it firsthand after it had fallen a few weeks later, but it's terrifying.
Yeah, no, I remember I was in Cleveland. My grandmother was having a knee replacement surgery. And I remember being there bright and early in the morning and hearing about the first tower. And then when we saw it on TV and everybody in the hospital, I mean, there were literally hundreds of people packed into this little waiting room, and just silence, the kind of silence that I still remember to this day, that people just can't believe what they were seeing. And I remember going, you know, this is the end of the world that I know. And that night when we left to go home, I went to stop to get gas, and gas had gone up to like $8.50 a gallon in the city of Cleveland, because there was this kind of panic. And you know, the one thing that I do give George Bush credit for is he did step forward in that moment and give a little bit of leadership that kind of calmed us a little bit. But sadly, and this is where I'm going to go back to you, Rich. I mean, I look at, you know, the aftermath, and looking back 20 years since that, and I know there's been a lot written about, you know, the Project for a New American Century had their report in the 90s that, you know, the conservative movement needed a Pearl Harbor type event to move forward on all their wet dream list. I would argue that they were right, and sadly, we didn't do enough to stop them.
No, I mean, I think, you know, looking back, it bothers me. It bothers me knowing that we had Osama bin Laden held up in the Tor Bor Mountains, and our guys were listening to their communication on the radios. That's how close, you know, and then all of a sudden to be pulled back and then redirected to invade Iraq. You know, this should have never lasted 20 years. It's taken, you know, countless lives And you know, it's, we're not even talking about those that were injured, that returned home, missing arms, legs, suffering with PTSD. I mean, I take enough sleeping meds every night to knock out two horses. You know, I mean, I have a hard time remembering names from traumatic brain injury. You know, I've got brothers that were very, very close to me that are no longer with us. And I sometimes I think, you know, why? Because the only people that really, you know, were the victors here were these companies, the military industrial complex. And I feel like, looking back now, I kind of feel like we were all done horrifically wrong just so people could pad their pockets. And we've got people that we can't bring them back.
Yeah, no, I mean, and again, you go back to the history of this country, and I remember in high school reading Smedley Darlington Butler's War as a Racket, because I had a high school history teacher who was kind of into that kind of stuff. And I remembered that, you know, as we were going into this race to war, because you knew this was going to lead to some major kind of war. And I still remember, you know, his quote of, you know, I was high priced muscle for the bank boys and the sugar interests and all this. You know, we basically fought World War One, according to him, for the billionaires to profit. And sadly, you know, as many of us were calling to ensure that soldiers didn't get dumped like they did after Vietnam and didn't get left behind, I don't know that we've done enough. Sarah, your thoughts.
What's interesting, I was, along with that, in the Project for a New American Century and all of the people who profited, if you look now, I think it's Paul Wolfowitz, Karl Rove, and some of the other Bush people have published articles in the last couple of weeks trashing Biden for, you know, the way that he exited Afghanistan. And it's like, it's kind of like the band getting back together to do a you know, national tour on really poor international decisions. So all of these stories, you just kind of want to lump them together and be like, here are the people we don't want to listen to again, ever. Just go away and be quiet. Your time is done.
Yeah, when Ari Fleischer jumps in, I want no part of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Scott, your thoughts?
I mean, it's a terrible situation, but again, it's all built up to this. So there's no easy exit. President Biden didn't have an easy way out, but at least he got us out. And I'll repeat again, if you look at the situation now, there are 80,000 plus Taliban, there's thousands of members, ISIS-K, there were planned potential attacks. He was able to extend that because he knew that it wasn't possible to get that many people out that quickly. And we were basically surrounded. So I don't know what kind of dreamland, but you heard Republicans just attacking from every side. But the most common thing that they're doing nowadays is they're siding with the Taliban, and whether they know it or not, they're pawns with the Taliban at this moment. They're really falling into them, probably mixed in with Putin and his interests over there as well. But it's sad and it's pathetic. And I wish that if channeled some of the 9/11 patriotism that we had then, where we kind of all gathered around the president, whether or not you supported him or not, you were an American and you supported each other. You didn't attack each other or look for ways. Oh, he looked at his watch. Let's replay that 15 times, because he definitely looked at his watch. I promise you, like that kind of low grade it's just disgusting. So I wish that people could recall exactly how it's supposed to be done, and not just let's find a way to attack him, because they're falling into a trap where they're actually not just attacking Biden, and for the most part, they're just attacking America in general.
No, because you're right. I mean, right after 9/11 happened, George Bush's approval ratings were, you know, like none ever seen, because the country wanted him to do well. There was no one who was saying, I hope he fails. There was no one at that moment saying, we're going to make him a one-term president. There was none of that stuff. There was, we've got to take care of business. We got to go get bin Laden. Nobody wanted a 20-year war. We were all sold on this idea that it was going to be just like going into Iraq the first time. It's going to be a weekend in the sand. We'd have the parties. It would be great. We would win. And that didn't happen, Rich. I mean, and people, Dick Cheney himself knew that if you go in and you occupy, you're in for the long haul.
Let me tell you, you know, I can remember in the beginning, it was like anything we wanted. I mean, if you took your annual budget, and this is a fact, your annual budget, and you went and spent it on whatever, as long as you listed and checked that block that said for the global war on terrorism, they refunded every single dime back into your account the following day. And you had everything. I mean, and we saw it. I saw the fraud, waste, and abuse. And I, you know, and that's one of the things that really angers me more than anything, looking back now, realizing that we were over there to protect the interests of these companies. We were over there so that they could continue to make money. You know, we should have come home in May of 2011 after we killed Osama bin Laden, and we could have had the parades, and we could have said we got him, and we this was our victory. And we stayed for another 10 years, and we lost more lives, and we sent more troops home broken. You know, we spent another $1 trillion. And it just, you know, I look back, and like we see these people that are now jumping all over, you know, President Biden. They're the ones that set this up so that we would be there for 20 years. I don't want to hear from Karl Rove. I don't want to hear from Dick Cheney. I mean, we're not hearing from Rumsfeld, and I'm hoping that he's rolling in hell right now. So that's just how I feel.
No, and I get that a lot from a lot of veterans who, you know, like Scott said, you know, right after this happened, there were, you know, thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of people who were immediately going to sign up because we're going to defend the country, and they went for all the right reasons.
Well, we were gung-ho. Look, I crossed the border at 2:30 in the morning into Iraq, and I was looking for weapons of mass destruction. Never found them because they didn't exist.
So how do we go back? And again, this is something I want to talk a little bit about in the next segment. So think about it for a bit, because we were lied into this. And I've got friends who were in Congress at the time who were saying, I can't tell you what we were shown. I can't tell you the lies that were given to us when we made our vote. And you know, there's nobody there holding them accountable. And this is, for me, one of these weird moments where I don't know that we've ever gotten to the bottom of 9/11, who was responsible and who was responsible for moving us in all of these directions that we've gone. But I'll tell you the one thing I do know. This is not the country that I grew up in. This is not the country that I wanted to leave for my children. And we've got an awful lot of work to do to undo some of this damage. So I got to take a quick break right here. On the other side, I do want to talk about how do we go back, and is there a way to go back and find out, you know, what went wrong, and who do we hold accountable, or can we hold anyone accountable? So we're going to take a quick break here with Rich Ojeda, national spokesperson for No Dems Left Behind, Sarah Burris, a reporter over at Raw Story, and of course, Scott Dworkin, co-founder of the Democratic Coalition. Love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Share some thoughts on what's going on. Going to take a quick break right here, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
There's nothing more American than workers standing up, and the union gives a voice to win. On The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1965. That was the day the Delano grape strike began in California. The strike came a year after activists had forced Congress to end the Bracero contract labor program. The Filipino Agricultural Workers Organizing Committee, led by Larry Itilong, Philip Vera Cruz, and others, called the strike against the Delano growers and the Coachella Valley grape growers. It had been a record harvest. Farm workers demanded higher wages, humane working conditions, and union recognition. When the growers refused, thousands walked out of the fields. A week later, the Mexican-American National Farm Workers Association, led by Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta, joined the strike. It was a historic moment. Within a year, the two unions would merge to form the United Farm Workers. The union sent strikers to the Oakland docks to persuade the longshoremen not to load non-union grapes. Many of the Filipino workers in the San Joaquin Valley worked in the Alaska fish canneries organized by the ILWU in the off-season. And so the ILWU honored their union brothers' request. Thousands of cases of grapes were left to rot on the docks. This initial victory led Chavez to organize a grape boycott against heavyweights DiGiorgio and Shenley Industries. 6 months into the strike, union leaders marched 300 miles from Delano to Sacramento to bring attention to their struggle. They hoped to pressure growers to the negotiating table and legislators to act on their behalf. For 5 years, the strike and boycott continued with marches, organizing, and picket line arrests.
Gradually, the UFW began winning higher wages, union recognition, and hiring halls. Finally, in 1970, a collective bargaining agreement covering 10,000 workers was reached.
Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Hey, podcast fans, have you heard about MSW Media? It's your one-stop shop for some of the best progressive voices in the business. At MSWmedia.com, you'll find shows like Justice Matters with Glenn Kirshner, The Bureau with Frank Figluzzi, shows with hosts like Greg O'Lear and Zev Shalev, and of course, Renato Mariotti, just to name a few. One of our personal favorites, The Daily Beans with Dr. Allison Gill. And of course, you can get The Rick Smith Show there too. Go to mswmedia.com for all these great shows and more. And help us push back against the right-wing hate machine, one download at a time.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So evidently Bill O'Reilly is predicting he's going to wind up in prison. And look, while I think he probably should be there for one reason or another, falafels and loofah sponges, maybe. I don't know. He's claiming that he's got a new book coming out. He's claiming he knows the secret war on terrorism because he claims to have all this classified information. And look, I would love to see it because, as I said in the last segment, I've got friends in Congress who are chomping at the bit, or who were in Congress, chomping at the bit to tell what they were presented, which got us into these wars. They want to tell what was there. They just can't. So for me, this is a moment to reflect on this 20th occasion. I hate saying anniversary, but also maybe a way to look back and go, how do we get that information? And here are some thoughts on, can we get it? And should Bill O'Reilly go to jail? Is our all-star panel, Rich O'Jetta, national spokesperson, No Dems Left Behind, Sarah Burris, Raw Story, and Scott Dworkin, Democratic Coalition. Let's start with you, Scott. Should he go? Should we be locking up Bill O'Reilly for claiming he's got classified information? Or is this just pure hype, pitchman kind of carnival barker stuff?
There are dozens of other reasons that Bill O'Reilly should go to jail. And so, I mean, we can start with those. That's why I found it funny. I'm like, well, maybe you should go to prison for, you know, your harassment and everything else that you've done. I think he's just building it up, and then it'll be like a poof of smoke. It'll be something that either doesn't exist, or if he does, like, why do you wait so long to release whatever he's talking about? A lot of it just doesn't make any sense. So I would assume that if he is making these claims, now that we have a working U.S. government, that he will hear from them through the attorneys, and the attorneys will say that it's hyperbole, blah, 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 blah. It's not really what it is. It's documents that were publicly accessible, but he had to get a FOIA, like something like that, where it's very easy to explain. I don't think that he is going to be in prison for that. But for something else, I would assume that he's, you know, corrupt on taxes and everything else. So I wouldn't be surprised with that. But with having documents in his possession as if he's a reality winner, I doubt it. He doesn't have a bone in his body to actually hold on to something like that. And he's too wealthy to risk something like that as well. So I there's no way that he has some kind of documents we haven't seen before that are illegally in his possession. And if they are, then the DOJ has to arrest them, and they have to do it now. And
A lot of this stuff is already available from the 9/11 Commission. We had a pretty extensive report that I think was in two different volumes. It was so big. Mm-hmm. that detailed pretty specifically about who was asleep at the wheel and what we knew and when we knew it and who didn't act. And, there's a lot of stuff that's not a secret. What is a secret is who was lying about what and who made up stuff to get us into Iraq. That's a horse of a different color. And I think, you know, we should get to the bottom of that. I don't really, you know, like the Afghanistan thing, I think everybody understands, okay, we wanted to go after bin Laden, but I mean, geez, the Iraq war was just a farce.
Bill O'Reilly, you know, he's a news media person. He doesn't have a top secret security clearance. So, you know, if he has information that is, you know, that level of information, then ultimately it's somebody who let him know about that, that is the person that's really in trouble. I wouldn't put it past Bill O'Reilly just to be doing this to try to, you know, spark up book sales. Yep. But I doubt very seriously that he has any type of security clearance that allows him to be read on any of the information like this.
Yeah, but
this is Bill Riley.
Yeah, but in his very pompous kind of I know everything kind of way, he said, quote, "I know as much about American security as anybody on the planet." He knows. He knows more than you do, Rich.
Okay, well, I mean, I have a top secret security clearance, and I never saw him in any of those meetings. So, you know, whatever.
He sounds like Donald Trump when he says that stuff, right? It's like the hyperbole where you're like, "I know everything because I am Bill O'Reilly. Thus saith the gods that give me, that anoint me with my Bill O'Reilly-ness and all of my top secret information."
I mean, at the end of the day, if he has information, the only major issue is how did he get that information?
Yeah.
And if it's that level of information, then that's a serious situation and it must be investigated. Without a doubt, just like what Scott said, you know, the DOJ has to be involved in this.
Yeah, sadly,
and I would like it. Let's let him go down.
Can't really dig up 9/11 info anytime soon. And let me tell you why. The former president was the most corrupt president in the history of this nation. And we have so many other probes that we have to go through that are an imminent danger to us that involve domestic terrorism that we need to focus on first. Including January 6th, including the planning and implementation of this September 18th. We have to look at everything that he did during his entire presidency. Then we can eventually revisit what led to everything overseas past 9/11. But until then, you know, we can't really look into it because we're too busy, spread too thin.
Yeah, I'm of the mindset if he's got stuff, I'm not even all that concerned about where he got it. I think we should be finding out if it's real, and we should be holding people accountable. I'm at this point where we've been lied to so often, so many times, that it's time that we hold these people accountable. Because this is where, you know, some of the anger, and I have some Trump supporter friends who, yes, and I still do have a few, who I still have a little bit of respect for, because honestly, they're not entirely wrong when they look at our political system and go, nobody's ever held accountable. And this is just another one of those things that go, you know, we never go back and put people in jail at those levels. You and me, we do something wrong. Rich, you would have done something wrong. You'd be behind bars. But the Cheneys, the Wolfowitz, the Rumsfelds, you know, the Gonzalez's, go down the list, the Billy Barrs, the whole clan.
The problem that we have in this country right now is that, and you're absolutely right. I mean, if we were going to hold people accountable and these people wasn't above the law, then Loeffler and Perdue would have already been arrested for insider trading. You know, I mean, look at what these people are doing right now, you know, and I'm hoping that we see something out of McCarthy and Marjorie, you know, Trainwreck Green and the rest of them that are threatening, telecom companies to obstruct justice. I mean, well, Scott is right. You know, there's so many things going on right now that requires investigations to get to the bottom. But at the end of the day, I want to see these people go down. I want to see Cheney brought to justice. I want to see these people because at the end of the day, you know, we went to war. We spent 20 years at war. We broke a lot of people. We all lost a lot of brothers and sisters in arms. And for what? So that their organizations could pad their pockets. And I want to find out if that is the truth, because I believe that it is. And I want them to be held accountable. I want people to not be above the law, you know. But once again, when are you going to do something about Trump? He spent 4 years as a crime family and nobody's done nothing at all to him.
And we spent how many trillions of dollars on Iraq and Afghanistan, and now you've got people like Joe Manchin saying, oh, well, we can't pass this budget that pays for paid family leave, the child care, because, you know, we're in too much debt.
I want Joe Manchin to go down. I want Joe Manchin to go down for his daughter with the EpiPen issue, and while his wife lobbied to make sure that schools in 13 states had to carry those pens. That's a crime family is what it is. I want to see Manchin go down. He's garbage. I bust him every single day. You should see the messages I send him.
Good for you.
Scott, you want to chime in?
No, I'm good. No,
So this week also, President Biden canned a bunch of people from the the advisory boards of our military institutions, of the academic institutions. Kellyanne Conway was the one who led the way. I don't know why Kellyanne Conway or the stirrup woman or a couple of them were there, because they don't really have any military background. Someone like Spicer, I can maybe see.
She served in the Bowling Green Massacre, Rick. I mean,
Rick.
A lot of people don't know that.
This is why. And this is, let me tell you, this is what the Republicans do right.
Yes.
The Republicans play the long game.
Yep.
By putting Kellyanne Conway and Sean Spicer and those people on the boards of the military academies. They could literally look at these people and look at their backgrounds and say, these people that are coming here to these places are going to become the leaders of our military for tomorrow. So let's look at this person. Yeah, he's kind of a Democrat background. Scratch. Let's get this person here who's got a conservative background that maybe 10 years down the road, we can convince to do something else. I'm telling you, this is them playing the long game. And I'm glad that they finally got rid of him, and it shouldn't have took 6 months.
I agree.
Yeah. Even if it took them, it did take them a while to do that. And obviously he's had other priorities. I'm not going to defend that. But I think also after he had lost and Trump really knew that he lost, I think he also would be setting up this situation so that it would cause another speed bump, as he did with Afghanistan. He sets him up for failure. He sets Biden up for failure. And I think that the former administration did that a lot. And so this is one of those speed bumps. But that's 18 different people, you know, that were on boards that were not qualified or were too corrupt to be on those boards. So anybody saying McMaster, give me a break. Okay. He was just as corrupt as the rest of them. He was sticking up for him. I talked to his advisors. I've talked to his board members. I've talked to people that worked with him. All of these people were sucked into the corruption, whether they chose to be a part of it or not. They're involved with the biggest crime family, as Rich said, in history, I think, ever in world history.
And now Sean Spicer is playing the victim, where he's just like, how dare you? How dare you insult my patriotism? And everybody's looking around being like, what? Nobody insulted your patriotism. They insulted your intelligence, buddy. Like, come on.
Any patriotism.
Yeah, nobody cares about your patriotism. We care about how dumb you are and what a corrupt fool and somebody who's going to let white nationalists into the military. Like, this is what we're actually concerned about here.
No, and this is one of those moments where, you know, I've been saying now that, you know, the Republican Party, the party of Lincoln, now loves Robert E. Lee, which is really just twisted. And you talk to any conservative on any different day, their history changes, they rewrite things. You know, they're the Winston Smiths of our generation. They go back and rewrite what they believed yesterday. And this is another perfect example of this. I mean, did you see the letter that the former guy put out? Except for Gettysburg. And did I miss the history lesson where President Abraham Lincoln was trying to trade for Robert E. Lee? We'll give you Ulysses S. Grant and a general to be named later. Or, you know, maybe we can sell you something. Did I miss how there was a trade maybe going to happen? Because if I'm reading the former guy's letter, that was a possibility that Grant could have gone south, I guess, and Lee would have been leading the north. Am I missing something?
I don't know. We would be giving something to someone who surrendered, waved a white flag, and lost, and is a traitor by definition. And it's just baffling to me, because he was such a freaking racist, just by the book racist, teaching racism to people, and really awful garbage human being that never should be honored in any way whatsoever in this country. He should have the ranks of Hitler. That's where he ranks in my book.
The best thing about Robert E. Lee is that Abraham Lincoln eminent domained his property and started burying Confederate soldiers on his property. And that's what Arlington National Cemetery is. That land is Robert E. Lee's land that the United States took from him and said, guess what? You know, the dead of this war will be on your land forever. And that continues to this day.
To hear President Trump say the genius of Robert E. Lee. I mean, really? I mean, the guy was a treasonous traitor. I celebrate those statues coming down. I celebrate changing the names. I absolutely look at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, as the place that I become who I am. You know, I love Fort Bragg, North Carolina. It's hallowed ground. And change the name. Change the name. Why should we allow traitors to have their names, you know, live on forever? Get rid of them. I have no problems. Let's call it Fort Rafferty. He was the first sergeant that I served with that got killed in Afghanistan. I'll go with that any day of the week.
Yeah,
he was a loser. He was a loser, too. He lost. He surrendered. He lost.
Except for Gettysburg. Gettysburg.
Apparently, the Bowling Green Massacre and the Revolutionary War, where there were planes, something like that, right? Isn't that what he said?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy what, you know, what this guy comes up with. And the weird thing is, and this is where, you know, I bring it back to, you know, we never really learned our history, because I literally sat here and I'm going, I don't remember Lincoln, you know, in negotiations to get Lee. That makes no sense, because as you said, he was a racist, horrible human being. This was about slavery. This was about the ideology of slavery. I don't know how a general who's willing to be a traitor to his country would sell his soul a second time to go, well, I've changed my mind, I'm going to the other side because they can win. That's just bizarre.
No, it doesn't make any sense. And a lot of the thing that's really depressing, and I think we're seeing the effects of now, is that we don't have civics in school. We don't talk about a lot of this history, because this is what they're trying to ban, right? These are conversations about slavery and about the Civil War that people don't want to discuss in schools anymore, because that's controversial, and they don't want to admit that, you know, that they lost, and they want to try and have the South rise again. And God forbid we ever quote Martin Luther King in classes. We have to ban that. And it's just absurd. Like, this is what our country is becoming.
Yeah. They want to hide the ugly history in this country. And a big part of it is they don't want their kids to realize that grandma and grandpa were the ones that were standing around those African Americans and white people that were trying to fight for, you know, freedoms in the South, pouring stuff on their heads and thumping on them while they were, you know, in a cafeteria sitting at a counter. You know, it's a shame.
Yeah. He also thought that slavery was good for black people. He also thought that it was bad for white people because it was time consuming. And that's a straight up quote from him. So he's just an absolutely awful guy that believed in corporal punishment, did not care about you unless you were a white dude, and a white dude supported him and his ideals. And this is a guy who, you know, was bred from West Point and used to run that military institution. So like he had the background. He had this. It's kind of like how Trump was handed his golden kind of ticket. Robert E. Lee has no standing in the United States of America. Again, he should be mentioned with Hitler, Bin Laden, terrorist, because that's what he was. He was a domestic terrorist. And so
I'm right there with you. I got to take a quick break here, guys. On the other side, I want to get into what's going on down in Texas. But the highlight, like what Rich said a second ago, you know, the reality is you wait long enough, the history will change. And they do play the long game. The Republicans have always been good at the long game. They fund think tanks for, you know, years out. They've got people who are lying around with lots of bad ideas. So when bad things happen, they've got things that they can shove on us. I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back on the other side. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. This day in labor history, the year was 1941. The ravages of World War II had swept across Europe. German troops had invaded Norway in April of 1940. The conditions of the Nazi occupation grew increasingly harsher. The Nazis began rationing milk, an important part of the diet of Norwegian children and workers. The rationing, however, did not apply to the German occupiers. Angered shipyard workers in Oslo walked off the job in protest. Workers from other
other industries join them. 20,000 workers from 50 factories and work sites participated in the strike. The Nazi response to the uprising was predictably swift and brutal. 200 labor leaders were arrested and new Nazi chosen leaders put in their places. 27 of the arrested labor leaders and strikers were brought before a court-martial trial. Rolf Wickstrom, a welder and union steward, and Harold Vigo Hanstein, a labor lawyer, were sentenced to death for their involvement in the strike and executed. The remaining 25 strikers were convicted and sentenced to long prison sentences. Ludwig Bulin, a union railway worker, died while serving his prison sentence. So did Harry Vesely, a factory worker. Journalists were fired or arrested. Even groups like the Boy Scouts were banned. Listening to foreign broadcasts on the radio were expressly forbidden. Then radios were confiscated. In Sweden, trade unionists issued this statement in support of their fellow Scandinavian workers. They wrote, quote, "Norwegian trade unionists have fallen in the battle for Norway's freedoms and for the right of the Norwegian working class to decide for itself its own actions with the limits of Norwegian law. We honor their memory." In 1948, a memorial was placed to honor the deaths of Wickstrom and Hanstein and the workers who stood up for their country. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
I want to take a second to tell you about our friends over at the Political Voices Network. PVN is a new network dedicated to promoting left-leaning voices like The Stephanie Miller Show, The Tom Hartman Program, Richard French Live, and of course, The Rick Smith Show. To find these great shows and lots of other great content, go to politicalvoicesnetwork.com and help us pull the plug on the corporate-controlled mainstream media. And as always, thank you for your support.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, look at what's going on down in Texas. And I got to tell you, I think the Republicans made a huge mistake here. They have energized the otherwise, I don't know, a Democratic base that was kind of in a lot of different places, media sending them off, and, you know, vaccine's not going so well, economy's not doing great. Now you've got, they're doing what they said they were going to do. They are going to outlaw Roe versus Wade. They're going to undo it, and they're going to make abortion illegal in this country. And I've had conversations with women for years about, no, they're never going to do it. And I say, no, they're going to do that, and they're going to go even further. The crazy right wing of this country wants to undo the Griswold decision back from the 60s, and your birth control goes so that you are then controlled by, well, me, the white guy. Doesn't that make you happy? And they're, oh, that'll never happen. Well, I don't know. Look what's going on in Texas. And here to share some thoughts on the Texas ban and what our Supreme Court did or did not do, our all-star panel of Richo Jetta, Sarah Burris, and, of course, Scott Dworkin. Guys, thanks for sticking around.
You bet.
So, Sarah, let's start with you because I'm going to start with the woman in the room. Thoughts on Abbott's ban? Thoughts on what they're doing in Texas? Go.
Man, I haven't been sleeping that well because I'm just so filled with fury and worry, honestly. Like my first reaction was, okay, I know we have a Planned Parenthood in Oklahoma. Do I need to buy a school bus and basically drive it down to the border to meet a whole bunch of women to take them back up, you know, to the city to get, you know, taken care of, to get the whatever health care they happen to need. And you know, I started thinking about like, okay, can we start an organization for, let's say, women are going, pregnant women to hike in Colorado, and we can all meet in Colorado, and then they can just happen to be next door to a Planned Parenthood, right? Like, I was coming up with every single idea I could trying to figure out how to be able to help these women. And it really shouldn't be on me. Right? It shouldn't be on any of us. It should be on the Justice Department and it should be on the Supreme Court because this is ridiculously unconstitutional. This is not even people who are anti-choice can look at this and realize that having vigilantes go after women, putting bounties on women's heads, that is completely unconstitutional. And if the Supreme Court decides that they're going to uphold this, then I think it's time for other states to start saying, okay, well, we're going to do the same thing for people with guns. We're going to do the same thing for people who won't get vaccinated, because that's where this could go. And I mean, I could talk forever on this.
No, it couldn't go there, Sarah.
So infuriating.
It's only going to go after women. We don't do the gun things in this country. It's only going to be after you. And that's the sad reality of the world we're in. I mean, and the weird thing is I've actually found some women who are going, yeah, I'm okay with it, which is bizarre to me.
It is bizarre. And this is like, the thing that infuriates me too, is that all of these guys, Greg Abbott in particular, don't even know how our bodies work. They don't, the whole idea of, a 6-week pregnancy is not actually 6 weeks. It's the day that you, the last day of your menstrual cycle the first day of your menstrual cycle.
I don't want to hear it.
Basically, and what happened to me, what's crazy is when my partner and I were pregnant, even though it was just me, I know the exact day that we conceived because both of us were traveling. We had a beautiful Valentine's Day. We had a nice date night. And then I took off and had to go travel someplace else. And then, you know, I was knocked up. And so I knew the exact day. But when I go to the doctor, they're like, well, what was the day of your last period? And I'm like, oh, it was, however many weeks ago. And they're like, okay, you're 6 weeks along. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm 4 weeks to the day. I got pregnant on the 14th. I know exactly what day it was. I was there. You know, so this is just really infuriating. The whole science around this, the idea that a heartbeat starts at that time, which is a complete misnomer. The sounds people are hearing is the echo from the machine. When you look at the sonogram, the flicker people see are actually the cells creating the heart. The heart doesn't even exist yet.
Right.
So there's, and not to mention the whole, they actually took heart cells that they put in a petri dish and were able to grow heart cells that then started to beat like years and years ago. You could have a heart beating in a petri dish. So how did that signify life? Like, I could go off on this for hours.
One of the main issues that we have here is that they refuse to educate themselves. I mean, mm-hmm. We know if you want to reduce abortion, and everybody should be for that. The Democrats, the liberals are not for abortion. But the thing is reduce it properly. Make contraceptives free. Make sure that equal pay for women is the same as men. A lot of women that go down that path do so because they fear that they're not going to be able to afford that child. So let's help them make sure that they have equal pay for men and women. You know, I mean, when they one state made IUD free, and it reduced abortion in that state over 50% like that.
Yep.
You know, there's so many ways that we could reduce abortion in this country. But when you tell people that they can't do it, when you deny these people, then you have to be ready for what's going to happen. Because make no mistake about it, the rich are always going to have access to that one person that will provide that procedure for their daughter who made a mistake. The problem is that the people that are of color, the people that are poor, will not get that capability, and they will resort to going into these back alleys, and then we've got to watch bodies stacking up again, and that's unacceptable. What Greg Abbott and them are doing in Texas is absolutely unacceptable. I think that this women's march that's getting ready to take place in all 50 states, I hope that every one of them women absolutely vow to vote out every single Republican in this next 2022 election.
Absolutely. And, you know,
amen.
I say what you have to do is you have to hold the men accountable as well. I look at my own story. I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland because my deadbeat father ran off. My sperm donor ran off. I don't even know his name and I don't want to. But it left my mother and I in deep poverty. And she struggled for years just to keep a roof over our head and food on the table. And we were on and off welfare, you know, quite often because the 70s were not a good time for single mothers. It's not a good time now for single mothers, but it's better than it was. But nobody holds them accountable. Nobody was able to go get him to pay child support or to do any of that. So if you're going to do what they're doing in Texas, wouldn't the first thing be, you know what, we're going to make sure that if you fathered a child, you pay for the damn thing.
Care about the child after the child is born, though. They don't care about anything that happens after pregnancy. Mm-hmm. I would say the only good news that we have today about this is DOJ filed suit in Texas or against the state of Texas, hoping to block the entire abortion ban. And in support of what Sarah said in the lawsuit, it actually says that the law is in open defiance of the Constitution. And what Merrick Garland said verbatim today was the act is clearly unconstitutional under longstanding Supreme Court precedent. And I think that it's really key for people to recognize this is not just in a supportive role. If you're not a female, you have to stand up as well. It's key for anyone else to stand up. All men in this country need to stand up for women. These are our daughters, our sisters, our aunts, our moms, our grandmas, and you want some kind of sleaze bag in Texas who doesn't know them to have control over their bodies? That is sick and twisted. Yep. And no one should have that kind of control over anybody, let alone women. I mean, it's just, then he sits there, then Abbott sits there, and this what got me the worst. He sits there and he responds, he's like, oh, well, it includes the fact, the ban of abortions, including rape and incest. And he's like, but we're going to get all the rapists off the streets. And I'm just like, what are you talking about? So luckily, the best press secretary ever responded by saying, well, if he's got an idea for getting rid of all the rapists that no one ever in the world history ever has ever been able to do, then we'd be more happy to see it. But that is the kind of ridiculous stuff that we don't need, because he's not going to do that. Right. He's not going to enforce these laws. If he does anything, this is just making it worse. You're making it so women can be criminalized just off assumption and the presumption of guilt. Oh, you're pregnant. Like, think about that. Think about if they're not pregnant. Like, are they allowed to take custody of those women? Like, are they going to kidnap them? If they're wrong, is that kidnapping charges? If they're like, is it harassment? Like, what if it's an ex-boyfriend and his ploy, he gets dumped or whatever, and his new ploy, his way to harass her is to use the court system, act like she's pregnant. And then all of a sudden she's vilified, she's demonized. And like, people aren't thinking about the repercussions here, because again, this is laying the groundwork for nationwide. And so we have to put a stop to it now. That's why Merrick Garland moved so well, at least swiftly, for the DOJ, that is. But that's what I'm worried about, is people are going to be running out there thinking that, even if it's illegal, thinking that they can, their spouse or whatever, that, if they try to get an abortion, I want my $10,000. I want to turn in my wife. Like, what kind of world are we living in? We don't have the right to do that. And that is not America. That is Afghanistan now.
Yeah, well, the America we live in, the sad reality is, when I first saw this, I immediately thought, we're going to see on like A&E or FX or one of these cable, here comes Dog the Abortion Hunter. Or, one of these crazy reality shows where you get some character who's, chasing around women's menstrual cycles. And you go, well, that's ridiculous. They could never do it. Evidently, the state of Missouri was doing it. Evidently, the state of Missouri was following women's cycles, because I guess you give that away on these apps that are available. And because they wanted to know how many abortions Planned Parenthood was doing. And I'm going, shouldn't we be really concerned about the fact that our government and private corporations know so much about all of us?
Well, we also need to also understand and educate people about Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood they do so much. We should quadruple the funding for Planned Parenthood. That's an absolute fact. They do medical screenings. They do counseling. I mean, they make sure that clinics that proceed with those procedures, they make sure that they're clean and safe. That's the key. But
they
here's
do STD tests for men, even.
Yeah, they do. Planned Parenthood does all kinds of stuff. But you know what? When the penalty for abortion is worse than the penalty for rape, that's where we're looking at. That's what we're looking at right now. You know what's going on in Texas, and I'm sitting here thinking to myself: is Governor Abbott and Governor DeSantis, are they competing to see who can be the absolute worst? Because the sad part is that I believe both of them are trying to impress Donald Trump to either get his approval for their presidency run, or going to pick one of them up as his VP if he goes in 2024.
Yeah, he's going to totally ignore them. The naivety and other stupidity. Next week comes out this TV show that I think is brilliant timing. It's called Why the Last Man, and the premise behind it is all men on earth except for one dude dies. And so I think there's going to be a lot of celebration around this show. it's very kind of reverse Handmaid's Tale, where women take over the world. And you know, I've always believed, and this is why I worked for so many women over the last few decades, is I truly believe that women should take over our government, our country. Men had their chance, we ruined it. And I just don't think that we have the prowess and the wherewithal to manage the country. So I think we blew it here. And this is just more proof. I can't get over the fact, like, you want somebody that to accuse your wife or your sister or your daughter of being pregnant. And if she's not, like, how are they going to find that out? How are they going to figure out if she's pregnant or not? And you want that invasiveness? You want some other creepy doctor digging her? Like, no. You get your hands off the women. Like, get your hands off. Like, it's not your business. So, like, how are they going to figure this stuff out? That's my curiosity that I have, because it's disgusting. And at that point, you have forced sexual assault. You know, you have a different kind of rape. You have, and this is just medical procedures guised under sexual assault. So it's just a disgusting precedent. And again, the road that it goes down is so terrible that they have their head up their butts because they don't know what they're talking about. The naivety and the, oh, well, we're just going to not talk about sex and then they won't have sex. And it's like, abstinence ain't going to work, dude. People are going to have sex. So, like, you got to teach about condoms. It all relates. If you teach people, if you educate them, if you provide them with medicine to cure things, to prevent things from happening, you will actually solve problems. You can't just solve it by praying. Thoughts and prayers don't work for anything if there is another solution. Because God, guess what? God created abortion. God created birth control because he created the scientists behind it. You see what I'm saying?
I'm right there with you, but you're putting way too much thought into this. There's part of me that goes, I'm struggling here. There's part of me that goes, you think that they want to solve a problem. They don't. They simply don't want to control people.
You're right. But here's the thing, though. I just saw this the other day. You know, Nancy Pelosi is talking about bringing a bill to the floor that's basically going to say that if it passes, that, you know, regardless of what any state does, they're going to have to follow the law of the land, which is Roe v. Wade. And that needs to happen. Nancy needs to go ahead and get that pushed and passed. And then I don't care what Greg Abbott has to say.
Well, the thing I wonder about Greg Abbott, you know, he says that he's going to put an end to rape in Texas. He's been the governor of Texas for how long? And he hasn't been able to do it yet. So what makes is this like a campaign pledge? I mean, they have a huge infant mortality rate in the state of Texas. And to be fair, the United States has an infant mortality rate that is way higher than it should be. The industrialized world, we're among the worst.
Yeah.
So if we care that much about babies, there's that piece of it. Then you've got all these kids who died in the freeze in Texas, like since when, and now they're dying of COVID. So since when do you care about life?
Good point. No, absolutely. And look, if we cared about them, especially the poor ones, we would do more for it. This is going to be something that's going to continue on over the coming weeks and months. Guys, I appreciate the input. I hope that you'll come back again next week as we pick up the All-Star panel. Rich Ojeda, No Dems Left Behind, Sarah Burris, Raw Story, Scott Dworkin, Democratic Coalition. Guys, appreciate the time, the input. Thanks so much.
Airborne.
Thank you.
If you guys missed any of the program, thericksmithshow.com, that's where you go to get it. The podcast, all there for everyone to grab. If you got questions, comments, something on your mind, love to hear it. Issues you want us here on the panel to address, most certainly send them to me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Make sure you follow us along on Twitter @ricksmithshow, Facebook, YouTube, all those places, all ways to interact with our program. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.